Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to ID the Future. This is Annika Smith, broadcasting from the CSC in Seattle. And on today's show, we feature part two of an interview with CSC Senior Fellow Benjamin Weicker, author of the new book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World. On our last episode, Dr. Weicker discussed the historical responsibility philosophers have for their ideas. On today's episode, Dr. Weicker explains the responsibility Darwin has to his theory, exploring the chain from Darwin to Hitler, Nietzsche, and Sanger.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, that Rousseau was historically responsible. Are philosophers and writers, are they responsible for the actions? I mean, obviously Rousseau is responsible for his own family, but are they responsible for the actions of those who imbibe their philosophies?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a common intellectual move that says, oh, no philosopher can control all the way that his thought will be used. Well, sure. Okay, I understand that. I mean, somebody could misuse something, but the followers of Marx weren't misusing Marx. The followers of Rousseau weren't misusing Rousseau. The followers of Darwin's eugenic program weren't misusing Darwin. You know, therefore, the original thinkers are responsible. Absolutely. And that's why I make so many historical connections, so you can see the chain of responsibility. Nobody should get off the hook. And that makes philosophy a rather serious effort. I mean, to me, that's the wisdom of somebody like Plato and Aristotle. They understood that your words can be both taken badly and taken well. But even so, you have a moral burden to know the truth, but also to speak the truth in such a way that it doesn't become malformed.
That's a point that's really lost on a lot of people today.
And
I think especially when it comes to Darwin and the responsibility and descent of man, which you spend a chapter talking about and then go back to quite a bit. This thing you have at the very end of your chapter on Darwin, that we can't brush off his pernicious words away with just the, oh, he's just a man of his time, which is what we tend to do, or we tend to hear coming from the media, that yes, he was racist, but it was just a product of his time. You say Darwin made his time.
Yeah. If you look back over any reasonable count of history, I mean, things change when Darwin writes The Origin of Species. And dramatically so, even though he's part of a larger movement of materialism. So he's not to blame for the entire materialist project, which reduces human beings to chemical reactions. That having been said, you can't simply separate Darwinism from eugenics that occurred all over Europe and America after Darwin wrote his Descent of Man. Now, it's important that I, in this book, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World, the book I focus on is not Darwin's Origin of Species. If you read that, you say, wait a second, all these people that come after Darwin are misusing his purely scientific, purely biological theory and applying it to human beings, and that's where eugenics comes from. So Darwin's off the hook. Well, that shows a lack of education. They simply haven't read Darwin's Descent of Man. It's Darwin himself showing you what it logically means to apply the Origin of Species to human beings. And there isn't any way out. And I quote quite frequently from The Descent of Man so that people can't have any wiggle room. And, you know, and I big, large quotes. So you see, this is really what he said.
Right, with context.
With context, and in the context of his overall arguments, you can see, well, this is what you would have to believe. I mean, all Darwin said is, look, if you see that traits come about from natural selection, and you see that human beings are just one more animal, and all their traits, moral, intellectual, and physical, come about from natural selection, then what is the obvious inference? The obvious inference is if you can breed other animals for desired traits, then you can breed human beings for desirable traits. Or to put it in the reverse, if you can breed out undesirable traits from animals, it's foolish not to breed out undesirable traits from human beings. And again, you know, this isn't something I'm getting from some obscure footnote from The Descent of Man. It's all throughout it. All throughout it. And it's also nonsense to say that Darwin wasn't a racist. I mean, just on evolutionary ground, it should be obvious, and he makes it quite clear, that race is the result of natural selection. That's why you have different races. He has to be a racist. He's, you know, in other words, there's no such thing as human nature for Darwin, any more than there's bird nature or pigeon nature or something, right?
There's nothing special about humanity.
There's nothing special. It's something that came about from biological changes, and it's going to disappear in the future on its way to becoming another species. I mean, that's not some bizarre idea that I've made up. It's right out of Darwin. And so there's no thing called human nature that's anything other than transitory. And when you have different races, which he calls subspecies, he puts the arguments of both sides. You know, are human beings all really the same species, or are the different races representative of different species? Well, since they can interbreed, they're not yet different species. However, as time goes by, they will be. How will that occur? Well, between the races, you're going to have a competition, and race will be pitted against race, and the races that are closest to each other will eliminate each other. That's just right out of Darwin. What he says is actually more vile than that. You know, he talks about the elimination, in one section he talks about the necessary historical transformation which will occur by racial conflict, which is just another form of species or subspecies conflict, the transformation that will occur that will leave in its wake a bigger gap than now exists. You'll have something that he says will be above the Caucasian. In other words, the Caucasian is the highest race. And then you'll have something... Well, it just happens to be an Englishman, you know, and actually the German Darwinists all thought they were, it was the German, but he said the Caucasian, so he, you know, he's casting his net wide there, but it isn't clear who he's, and he's very clear about who's on the bottom of the race, you know, he talks about the Negroid and the Aborigine, and of course he means the Australian, he even gives skull size differences to show where you are on the evolutionary spectrum, but, you know, he says in the future, you're through racial / species conflict among the human races, you're going to end up with a big gap. You know, after all the smoke clears, something above the Caucasian and something below the gorilla, everything else in between will be wiped out. Okay, well, that's for him a purely scientific statement. That is, this is exactly how you got human beings to begin with. That's how you got the different races. Mm-hmm. Evolution only works through conflict and extinction. It's going to work through conflict in the future. Why wouldn't it? It doesn't make any sense.
Right.
You know, I'm not making any deductions from Darwin. Darwin just says this, and he couldn't be clearer. And the people that are trying to paper over that are just creating a lot of false moot points and red herrings. You know, all you need to do is read the text, and that's why I focus on the text.
And you draw the line not only from Darwin to Hitler, but also Darwin to Nietzsche, Darwin to Margaret Sanger as well, and Kinsey. How did this thinking and this reductionism affect these other ideas and other philosophies?
Well, Darwin's influence is pervasive. I mean, that's why I can't understand why anyone would say there's no connection between Darwin and Hitler, because Adolf Hitler never quotes Darwin in Mein Kampf. Well, that's a silly statement, because historically, from Darwin on, that is from about 1860-ish on, now Descent of Man was published in 1871, you have eugenic thought spreading all over Europe and America among the top intellectuals and scientists. Okay, so it's all over. It's not some kind of weird thing in closets. It's right out of Darwin's Descent of Man, with the help of Francis Galton, Darwin's cousin, spreading the eugenic good news. Well, part of that, that influence went everywhere. And the German philosopher Nietzsche just simply picks up on that, and he provides, I don't want to say a spiritualized Darwinism, but he turns up the heat on Darwinism. But he's fundamentally Darwinist. I mean, anyone who tries to get around that just isn't making sense of what Nietzsche's saying. You know, Nietzsche says there is no God. His understanding of the will to power, and that famous phrase that comes from us, you know, there's no good or evil, there's just the will to power. Mm. Well, as I quote, you know, very clearly from Nietzsche's Beyond Good and Evil, he considered the will to power to be a manifestation of natural growing tendencies. In other words, it's like the lion. He just roars. He takes over anything in his path. He eats, you know, he kills his rival, and he eats his, eats the children of the rival in the pride. The tree overshadows other trees around it, so they can't grow, so it can grow. You know, so for him, this is a principle of life, and it needs to be manifested in human life. That is, we need to have what he calls the master morality, where the best and the fittest get what they want just to manifest their inner power.
And okay? To drive evolution.
So his picture, yeah, and it's strictly based on evolution. I mean, it's just foolishness to try to deny that, and it's also foolish to try to deny the Darwin, Nietzsche, and Hitler connection. No, it's just too strong. And the reason it occurs is because, well, a lot of scientists don't want that connection. They don't want to face up to that connection in any kind of a manful way. You know, folks, it's there. You got to take it, you know, take it on the chin. You got to understand, and you got to deal with it. And the same is true for a lot of academic philosophers who love Nietzsche. They don't want to be connected to either Hitler and sometimes not to Darwin. But a lot of people don't know that Sanger was a rabid evolutionist. And so she was an even more rabid eugenicist. And again, it was right out of the same intellectual pool as Hitler. And if I gave you some phrases from Margaret Sanger, and I said, well, is this from Adolf Hitler, or is this from Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood? I bet you couldn't tell a lot of the times, you know. She says, actually it was a banner of one of her journals, we need to create a race of thoroughbreds. She says several times in the book that I cover, The Pivot of Civilization, we need to eliminate the dead waste of humanity. Mm. Yeah, that's kind of, you know, it's hard to finesse that. And she goes on and on about the unfit. And again, I quote long evolutionary quotes, so people know why she was saying what she was saying, but she was just absolutely obsessed with the feeble-minded. The feeble-minded are taking over the world. They're dragging down human evolution, back down the evolutionary slope. And then you sort of pry around, well, how many people are we talking about here, Margaret Sanger, that you think shouldn't be alive? You know, she's very clear. They should never have been born. And if they're born, they should never be allowed to breed. Now, she doesn't say send them to the gas chambers. She's writing a couple, 3 years before Adolf Hitler, but she said, don't let these people breed. On one point, it's about 10% of the population. You know, she's using the new intelligence quotient, Binet test, and she's saying, okay, well, people of a certain IQ, sort of the mental abilities of somebody in seventh grade or 7 years old or whatever she's using at the time, these people were morons, and she uses that term, and imbeciles. Feeble-minded, and they should certainly not be allowed to breed. And then another example, suddenly it's up to about 30% of the population. You're thinking, wow, you're talking millions of people here you're trying to keep from breeding and shouldn't have been born. And then in another statement, she talks about, they were looking at the records from people who were doing physical and mental fitness tests for soldiers going into battle in America in the Second World War. Well, according to that, almost 45% of the population, we can infer, are feeble-minded and should never be allowed to breed. Well, 50 million people? 75 million people? Every other person? You know, I'm talking that you're going to meet on the street shouldn't have been born. That's pretty sick. Mm-hmm. And for her, that's a strict inference from Darwinism.
Wow.
Something that Planned Parenthood doesn't want you to know.
Oh, no. This is just so... The anti-human aspect of it is really remarkable, and it reminds me a bit of what you see today with the number of abortions when children are diagnosed with Down syndrome in the womb.
Yeah.
And the euthanasia movement and considering dead weight on society instead of the inherent dignity of life. It's really...
It's shocking.
It is.
You know, everybody's saying, you know, Hitler's are just, you know, the apogee of evil. Everyone, oh, we can't agree about anything else. We agree that Hitler was evil. Well, we've got the abilities to do what he couldn't do. We don't have to send the misfits and the unfits to the gas chamber. We have prenatal screening. Think about it. It depends on how old people are, but you think, gosh, you know, I used to see a lot more people in wheelchairs, see a lot more people who has Down syndrome. Where are they? They're not around. They're being eliminated. And the more people get obsessed with the notion of, well, I only want this. We're back to Hobbes now. I have a right to have a perfect baby.
Mm.
I have a right to have a boy rather than a girl, or a girl rather than a boy. Okay? I don't want to be bothered. Now you're like Rousseau. It's two children are bothersome enough. I don't want one with any of these problems. And so you're going to have the screening, and this is no different from the Nazi Action T4 program, where they eliminated a couple hundred thousand people, you know, who didn't make it. They weren't perfect. So we think Hitler's the very height of evil. It's unclear differences. Somebody make it clear what the difference between aborting someone who has Down syndrome, or you think has Down syndrome. It's not always accurate. And Hitler taking the misfits and the unfits to the gas chambers. I don't see the difference.
That was CSC Senior Fellow Dr. Benjamin Weicker on the effect Darwin had not only on Hitler, but on the way many people view human life. Check out his latest book from Regnery, 10 Books That Screwed Up the World, and visit his website at www.benweicker.com. For ID the Future, this is Annika Smith, signing off from the CSC in Seattle. Thanks for listening.
Music on ID the Future comes courtesy of composer Yuri Mamchur. Visit www.yuriproductions.com and check out his latest CD, In the Harbor. This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. Discovery President is Bruce Chapman. ID the Future Managing Editor is Robert Crowther. And the producer is Keith Bennett. ID the Future and ID Science in the News is copyright Discovery Institute 2006. For more information, visit www.discovery.org or www.idthefuture.com.